For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, Labrick listeners. Happy New Year. I'm so happy that you are here listening with us today. This is the final episode of season two.
In season one, I spoke a lot about my cultural background on my maternal side. And I spoke very little about my father's side. So I want to share a little bit about that today.
My father is from the U.S. Virgin Islands, and he also has family in Tortola, which is where my grandmother, his mother, was from. So today, as part of this episode, we are going to have a conversation with Dr. Sekou, who is a well-known professor, activist in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And the reason why I reached out to him is because I came across an article that focused on initiatives towards self-determination in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So today we're going to have a conversation around the work that he's currently doing at the University of the U.S. Virgin Islands, and also his political involvement as well in initiatives surrounding self-determination and constitutional development in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So I'm super excited to have him on the show. And here's a snippet of today's episode.
So our quest has been trying to get our people to see this constitution as an important step towards decolonization in a small way. It is not the same as a big step towards independence or statehood or free association, but it's a small step towards greater self-governance.
This is season two of Labyrinth of the First Gen, where we will hear the stories and the wisdom of leaders of African descent to learn more about how they are creating paths and breaking barriers across Central America and the Caribbean.
This is Labyrinth of the First Gen, where we are pioneers just by simply existing.
My name is Malik Sekou. I'm born and raised in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands. I'm one of those Virgin Islands whose origin, at least on one side, is deeply rooted in the U.S. Virgin Islands. My paternal side of my family is from St. John, which is a small island here in the St. Thomas, St. John district, and St. Croix. My grandmother's from St. John. My grandfather's from St. Croix.
Dr. Sekou and I connected over the fact that we both have parents from the U.S. Virgin Islands that moved to the United States.
Like you, there's a New York connection. My parents were actually both born in New York City, but my father's parents left the Virgin Islands in the 1920s during a great migration. It was just after the transfer in 1917.
Can you explain what you mean by transfer in 1917, just for the historical context?
In 1917, the people who lived here were considered U.S. nationals. We weren't U.S. citizens yet. There was a 10-year period, a decade, from 1917 to 1927, that we were simply U.S. nationals, not U.S. citizens, but many Virginians still immigrated to the States, in particular to New York City, where they found, I would say, common cause, found a haven among the African-American population, mainly in the Harlem area.
When Dr. Sekou mentioned Harlem, I remember I smiled because Harlem was my father's favorite place, and this is where he often convened with his friends and family. Anytime he wanted to hang out in New York City or go anywhere, he would take us to Harlem. And Dr. Sekou talked about the history of how Harlem was a place where people from the U.S. Virgin Islands migrated when they came to the United States. And this is where they found a community and found a safe haven. You mentioned that populations and communities that were immigrating to the New York City at the time found a common cause with the Black population in the United States, more specifically Harlem. I would love to learn more about in what ways did they find a common cause and in what ways did they find unity amongst their communities and similarities at the time.
Why would that happen? Well, most people who live in the U.S. Virgin Islands of African origin, at least at the time of the transfer, at least 85 to 90% of the population would be of African origin. Only about 10% would be of European. So when my grandparents left, my paternal grandparents left, they found a haven in Harlem and they raised their children there. My father met an African-American woman, my mother, in New York, and they got married and then returned here. I was born here.
Dr. Sekou talked about what was going on socially, politically, in Black communities at that time in New York City, but also in the Virgin Islands. And this is where the African-American population in the United States and the Black populations from the U.S. Virgin Islands, as well as the Caribbean, found their commonalities.
I would say that my experience in the Virgins has been like most people in my generation. I grew up at a time when African consciousness had reached an immense height. In the 1970s, we saw a combination of the Black Power movement, Rastafari, conscious reggae. The reggae in the 70s was a different kind of reggae. It was roots reggae. That's the era of Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, Bonnie Wailer, Culture, Burning Spear. So I was heavily influenced by that period.
Dr. Sekou was about his own life journey and how Black consciousness, this Black movement that was going on at the time and music, culture, and politically, how this also impacted his own ideology and the choices that he made in his life.
I served briefly in the U.S. military. I tell people it was good and bad, like Chinese food, sweet and sour. I learned a few, you know, life lessons about being a mature person, but my ideology was too far left, too radical to be in the U.S. military, so I had to let that stint be a short experience. I returned to the Virgins in 1984. When I returned in 84, I came to this university. It was then a college. I went to the University of the Virgin Islands. I finished 5 years here, then I returned to the United States, rather, to the University of Delaware, in which I got my master's and my PhD.
How did your time in the United States influence your ideology and your career choice today?
My time in the States, you know, allowed me to be more inquisitive. I remained very committed to African consciousness. In fact, I classify myself as a Pan-Africanist, which means my form of African consciousness sees unity among all Black people, African.
Can you talk about what led you into politics?
Then I returned from graduate school in 1992. I served in a status commission, which is an advisory commission that the VI government created to discuss political status and federal relations. And that experience exposed me to Virgin Islands politics. I served in that commission for its existence at that time until 1994. Then I continued on to work at the University of Delaware briefly for a year to finish my dissertation. Then I came back here one last time, final time in 1998, in which I got a job here at the University of the Virgin Islands.
Dr. Sekou talked about how involvement in politics was also directly related to his career in academia.
I've been a professor since 1998 until this date, so I've been here for quite a while. I have served in different positions as chair. My emphasis here at the University of the Virgin Islands is to deal with history and political science. I believe I'm one of the few Virgin Islanders who is blessed with political status, but my role as an educator is to elevate the consciousness of our people concerning self-determination.
Does your political ideology, and you mentioned being a Pan-Africanist, does this have any influence in your either stance or beliefs around self-determination of the U.S. Virgin Islands?
I would say that this complete obsession with political status ties into my ideological belief that people of African descent must seek to decolonize themselves from their system. I've worked to educate people, and several years ago, I was fortunate enough to write a grant from the Department of the Interior, which allowed me to initiate a public education campaign.
Dr. Sekou has been involved in many initiatives, which includes public education, grants that have a goal of creating initiatives in order to educate folks around self-determination. And he talked about when this work started and what was going on at the time and who was indirectly involved as well.
Beginning in 2016, I started my grant with the Department of Interior. They were generous enough to give us here in the Virgin Islands a $250,000 grant to educate the public on political status, constitutional development, and self-determination. And as you can guess, we started a process with all kind of energy and all kind of interest. And then in September of 2017, two mega hurricanes hit us, Hurricanes Irma and Maria. It put a dent into our education campaign, but still we attempted to elevate our people.
What was the effect or the impact of that first grant on the U.S. Virgin Islands?
The grant ended with a kind of a partially successful note because it inspired our legislature to pass a law that would initiate a referendum in November of 2020. This referendum posed two questions. One is, do you, the people of the Virgin Islands, support the adoption of the revised Organic Act of 1954 amended? That's one question. The second question is, do you support the creation of a sixth constitutional convention? The people of the Virgin Islands voted yes. And just for the benefit of the audience, the revised Organic Act of 1954 is a long set of words. All it means, that is the constitution that Congress had given the Virgin Islands. This congressional document has been modified over a 70-year period. And so this question was to ask the people, do you support using what you have used or accepting what you have used as the guiding document as your constitution, yes or no? And do you support creating a constitutional convention that's going to look at this very same document to adapt it or modify it? So the people...
Dr. Sekou highlighted the results of this particular referendum and what this meant moving forward for self-determination in the Virgin Islands.
75% voted yes, 25% voted no. We were able to get that support to become meaningful, and the legislature, the 34th legislature, passed a law that said that this sixth convention will be held this coming year. Actually, the sixth convention will be organized through a vote for delegates first in 2024, and then the convention will be created in 2025. So this revised Organic Act, it's kind of an unwieldy word. Many people ask me, Malik, is this organic food? Because Organic Act is a strange word to use in the 21st century. But Organic Act basically means it is a de facto constitution. But because it is given to us, it's not a document that we have ratified, it's not considered a true constitution. So our quest has been we must try to get our people to see this constitution as an important step towards decolonization in a small way. It is not the same as a big step towards independence or statehood or free association, but it's a small step towards greater self-governance.
Was it easy for people from the U.S. Virgin Islands to organize around pushing forward this organic act, and how was it possible to get their involvement in this ongoing conversation around self-determination?
This desire to push this revised Organic Act of 1954 has been somewhat difficult because many people haven't been excited about it. I don't know how New York politics is, but in the Caribbean, our politics is very personality driven. If you want to get people to support, you have to be an attractive personality. You have to be colorful. You have to have a base in the community. And then you have to have a unique flavor.
Dr. Sekou talked about why organizing around this organic act is somewhat difficult, especially when it comes to the context of politics in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Institution is not a personality, that's a kind of an abstraction. Organic act sounds like there's some extraterrestrial being. People are more interested in organic food than organic act. If I was promoting organic food or vegan food, that's easy. But to promote the Constitution deals with political power, separation of powers, rights and duties, that seems so abstract.
Regardless of the challenges, Dr. Sekou talks about how there is a growing interest in the public to learn more and understand more about what this Organic Act means in terms of self-determination.
I believe there's a growing interest in the public. Many of the people who live here may not call into the talk shows, but when I go to the supermarket, I walk the street, they say, Sekou, continue the good work, even though the ideas seem so unfamiliar. This Revised Organic Act 1954, Revised Organic Act issue is front and center. We view it as a step towards self-determination. It is not the big step, it's a small step. And I believe by January of next year, we'll have a level of interest.
We are going to take a short break and we will continue this conversation when we return. In the spirit of the new year, a friend of mine named Mercedes from Brazil and I have just launched our own women-owned social enterprise. And I'm super excited about this project because we launched an online store that sells handmade jewelry pieces created by artists. Our business is called Sonhos History Handmade. And a lot of what we are trying to do is to bring visibility to really unique pieces in Latin America and the Caribbean, and also to create a space where we can support the work of artists. We are really excited and we hope that you will also check us out on our website, which is sonhoshistoryhandmade.com. I will put the link to our project in the description of the show notes. You are going to love our dreamy, really cool and unique earring pieces. So I hope that you will support us. And again, Happy New Year. And we are back. This is Labyrinth of the First Gen. In this conversation, it was important to bring in historical context in the struggle of self-determination in the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's not something that is only exists in the present, but it was a ongoing struggle that continues to be part of the past of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Truth, there has always been a struggle for self-determination, even in the Danish era, because we and the Virgin Islands were once a Danish colony, and self-determination, as expressed in the Danish era, was a struggle for the people who live here to acquire more political rights. And for the African population, the black population here in the Danish period, our quest for self-determination is like the rest of the Caribbean. The first issue was to abolish chattel slavery. So if you take the discussion back to the pre-US era, our ancestors struggled to eliminate first chattel slavery.
Dr. Tseku talked about the importance of knowing about cattle slavery as it pertains to the Caribbean, but also after slavery was abolished, this didn't necessarily mean that the struggle of self-determination and freedom was over. In fact, it led to other insurrections on places like the U.S. Virgin Islands and the island of St. Croix.
The Danes imposed what we call the labor codes from 1849 until 1878. We had another insurrection in 1878, we call it the Great Firebun, in which our ancestors had a major violent resistance towards the labor codes.
The fire burning uprising in 1978 occurred in the Danish West Indies, even after the abolishment of slavery in 1848, because a lot of the black people of African descent, they were still living in conditions and on plantations where the conditions did not very much improve. This led to unrest, social unrest, and caused the fire burning uprising in 1878.
In St. Croix, they literally burned half the island down to the half the island was burned to the ground because they wanted to make sure that chattel slavery would not reemerge. Afterwards, there were some less violent struggles in which our ancestors created a labor union, the right to have a freedom of the press, and thus have a formative stage towards modern politics.
The United States took over the U.S. Virgin Islands in 1917.
By the time the United States took over in 1917, there was a generation of reformers who were on the path to getting a level of mass power. This desire for mass power meant that they wanted to ensure that we have a mass franchise, that everyone who lived here, who was an adult, would have the right to vote for his leadership, her leadership. And this struggle from 1915 until 1935, this 20-year struggle, was the foundation of the first Organic Act. The first Organic Act that was passed in 1936 was a congressional document that allow us the powers we were fighting for.
Dr. Tseku highlighted how this struggle for self-determination began long before the American establishment on the U.S. Virgin Islands.
So we would say that our quest for self-determination began even earlier than the American period. During the American period, the form of struggle changed so that our people desired to get more political power, get a mass enfranchisement, mass franchise or universal suffrage, then have elected officials in our legislature, and then struggle to expand our rights and powers step by step over a piecemeal fashion for the past 105 years.
Can you talk about this transition to under the United States? Did this affect or change the ongoing conversation around self-determination in the U.S. Virgin Islands at the time?
So self-determination began early. Now, in the modern period, as our people keep reforming the status quo, they begin to realize that some of our aspirations were in opposition to the colonialist mindset in the United States. The United States has that dichotomy. The United States is a tale of two cities. The U.S. has, on one hand, a progressive Republican tradition that is the envy of the world, and the other side is a racist, imperialist, backward tradition. It's two Americas in one. The people who lived here, our ancestors, they favored the progressive side of America. They didn't want to emulate the racist, backward side. So very early in our American cultural period or phase, our leaders began to look at what is good in America to emulate here. What was bad, they rejected. And so some people in the United States have this love it or leave it mindset, but we pick and choose what we want. we're going to pick what is good in America. We're not going to accept what is bad in America, because that's what you do. So I say this to you, that this quest for self-determination was an outgrowth of an internal process that began before the Americans purchased the Virgin Islands.
Dr. Sekou, as part of this conversation, talked about this growing desire for the people, communities of the U.S. Virgin Islands to have more power over their own decisions and their own policies and their own practices.
And as time grew, this desire for more and more powers meant that we at times are in opposition to federal policy. So there's a desire on one hand for us to have more power so that we can have a delegate to Congress who can vote in Congress. And also we want to have the ability to vote for U.S. president. We also want to have control of the local situation so that we have fullest possible autonomy. And then in a way, we also want powers as if we're independent. We want a close ties to the Caribbean because we're in the Caribbean. We want a close ties to the BVI because the BVI is right here.
We talked about, in the context of power, this conversation around relationship. Part of this conversation that is complex because there's people that want to maintain that relationship with the United States and at the same time also want to maintain relationships that they have with other places, other countries in the Caribbean.
As you know, in St. Thomas, you could reach and touch South Tola. I mean, I'm being metaphoric, but there's a sense that the Virgin Islands people want to have some capacity to be integrated into the region we live in, because we're in the center of the Caribbean. At the same token, there are many Virgin Islanders who want to maintain U.S. ties. So we have a mixed view on our situation.
How does the political conversation in the U.S. Virgin Islands, St. Thomas, differ from other commonwealths such as Puerto Rico when it comes to this ongoing conversation of self-determination at this moment?
Now, we have not developed the kind of political status discussions that you'll find in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, our neighbor to our west, Puerto Rico has three parties based on three political status options. One party supports Commonwealth, that's the Populares, the Popular Democratic Party. The other party, the New Progressive Party, supports statehood, and the Independence Party, independence. But we've never developed political parties that were rooted in political status. To this date, we don't have any political parties that are based strictly on political status. And the political culture in the VA tends not to allow political status to be a fault line. So people, most people I run into, they want the greatest amount of autonomy as a U.S. territory. They want to maintain a U.S. tie for pragmatic economic reasons. And people say it straight. They wouldn't pull the punch. They say the Americans have the money. And they want to have that access to the U.S. mainland. They could travel back and forth freely. So there's a sense of continuity with the U.S. ties. At the same token, people who live here tend to want more power, more say, which is a natural feeling. Everybody wants to run their own house. So those feelings are there. Some people say they want to be a state, but when you tell them they have to pay state taxes, they say they don't want to pay any taxes for statehood. That's, you know, who wants to pay taxes? So that's a practical issue. I think the way the Virgin Islands has evolved, we will very well want to have either a hybrid political status or something that allows the best of both worlds. That tends to be the mindset as a.
So what would this journey towards self-determination mean for the U.S. Virgin Islands to you? What would you consider to be a successful goal reached in this conversation?
Well, there are two things I would consider important. I believe the current generation of leaders need to prepare the society to take greater responsibility over its interests, its development. And if for any strange shift of modern politics, the United States decides to divest itself of territory, we already take care of ourselves. We don't feel abandoned. We can, you know, remain prosperous or become more prosperous. And the other direction, if United States decides to maintain close ties and we decide to become close to United States, now we're not seen as a dependent society or a burden, but we are a productive part of the society that has full power. So I wanted that no matter which way has a plan for us, we can, take it ourselves. Either we take ourselves as more autonomous and distant or closer to the United States. I would like the society to be well-governed, well-led, prosperous. We could stand on our own.
I want to say sereme to Dr. Sekou. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed our conversations, and you're such a worldly person and you knew a lot about Belize, so I love talking to you about that. And if any of you would like to follow Dr. Sekou's work, I'm going to leave some information more about the article that we spoke about. I'm also going to put the link in the show notes for people to reference to. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in to the Labyrinth of the First Gen for season 2. And like I always say, we appreciate all and every kind of feedback. So please make sure you review us, not only giving us those beautiful stars, but leaving comments around what are some things that you really liked and enjoyed about the show, or feedback around how we can improve. Super grateful to have you here, and this is the first week of 2024. Wishing you much luck, love, and peace in the new year. I'm looking forward to season 3, which would return at the end of March. So super excited to continue these global conversations, and thank you to my fabulous guests, for the guests that participated in the season and the beautiful work that they're doing to change and transform generations within their community. Sereme, thank you. And as I say, be in peace, folks, and I will see you for season 3. Thank you so much for listening.